Well, if you're well prepared and you work efficiently, there's actually a chance of getting out early today. Depending on how long I go on and on. Now, I just want to explain a few things. We're continuing our spectrophotometric pursuits today, but there's a couple differences compared to what you did last time. In the beetroot experiment, even though you did manipulate mathematically the absorbance, the raw values, what you did was just calculate another absorbance, right? The net absorbance. So absorbances were the final value you cared about, the final kind of quantity you cared about. Not so today. Usually absorbance itself isn't as valuable as actually how much stuff you have in that tube, right? That's much more valuable to know usually. To do that, you need to be able to convert an absorbance value into an amount of substance. You weren't able to do that last time because you didn't make a standard curve. That's what's required in order to do that conversion. So you won't have to do an absorption spectrum again. Someone else already did that work for you, and you know what the proper wavelength to use is, which just means make sure it's set to that, and you won't have to change wavelength at all today. But you're going to have to generate a standard curve. And a standard curve is called a standard curve because it's a graph that you make using data that you obtain for standards. In this case, standard solutions. They're standards, though, because you know the value of them. You know how much solute of interest is in each of these standards that you're going to produce. So they're not unknowns. That's what makes them standards. What is the solute of interest today?
Protein,
right. So for today's specific standard curve, you're going to graph something versus something else. Well, there's actually a couple ways we could do this. You're going to have absorbance as the ordinate or the y-axis variable, dependent variable. Absorbance versus, well, that's where we have a choice. We could do it as concentration. And there would be times when that would be appropriate to do. But notice that concentration, which there's multiple ways that you can express concentration. One would be mass of solute versus volume of solution, right? But no matter what kind of concentration you're talking about, concentration is already volume specific, meaning that it's divided by volume, and therefore it doesn't matter what the volume of that stuff you have is, the concentration will remain the same, right? Concentration of the ocean is the same as the concentration of a cup full of the ocean. Volume doesn't matter. And so we could do it as concentration because that's really, in a sense, what is most directly measured by the spectrophotometer, even though that's still indirect, of course. But notice that if we use exactly the same volume in all of our tubes, which you have to today, not only for the standard curve, but also for your sample measurements. If that volume is always the same, then you can go from mass per volume to just mass by multiplying by that constant volume, right? Volume cancels out in that case. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to make a standard curve that is absorbance versus micrograms of protein. And like I said, you generate this graph by using data from the standard solutions that you prepare. So you're going to make several solutions. The only difference is that they're all going to have different amounts of protein in it. BSA is your protein, but you're going to know how much exactly is in there to begin with. These aren't unknowns. Well, to get measurements for all the rest, you first have to use one as the blank, though, right? Which by definition won't have any protein in it at all. Now today's blank is not water. Remember, the blank in general has to be just like all the other samples you read, except without the solute of interest. So it has Bradford reagent in it, you know, all the ingredients except for the protein. And therefore don't expect it to be transparent to your eyes. That's not what makes a blank. is transparent to the spectrophotometer at that wavelength because it doesn't have any protein in it. Okay? Well, anyway, that is a point on the graph, 0, 0. Right? Then you'll get other measurements, other absorbances for your other standards. All the rest of these, besides the 0, all the rest of these are measurements, which is why they might not fall perfectly on a line. You'll see a linear trend if you do it well. But true measurements have some error associated with them, right? So they might be a little bit above or below what would be a perfect line. This 0 point, though, is not actually a measurement. When you hit the 0 button on the machine, you are saying this is the truth. This is exactly 0 by definition of blanking. And therefore, this holds more weight than all the other measurements do. The reason this is important is you need to fit a line to these data. And when you fit a line to data, you have two options. You can just do the line of best fit, where all that matters is how well it fits all the data, gets as close as possible to as many as possible of those points, and that's all that matters. Or you can force it to go through a certain intercept, which in this case would be 0. And that's the option you should make sure you choose on Excel when you graph these. And that's because this is the truth. All these other ones might be close to the truth, but you don't know. So force it to go through 0, and that will fit a line. Now, any line has what as its equation? Y equals mx plus b. But if b is 0, then that just collapses into y equals mx. And when you do the fit with Excel, it'll tell you what the value of m is. That's how you know you've correctly forced it through 0, by the way. If it has a b value, then you need to change that. You need to force it through 0. But that's the generic equation. In this particular graph, notice that y is absorbance and x is micrograms. So this really means absorbance equals whatever the value of m is, which you'll know, times micrograms. That's the important thing that you need then to mathematically convert later measurements of absorbance when you measure unknowns, not the standards, in order to convert those into numbers of micrograms. If you just algebraically solve this equation for x, you really have micrograms equals absorbance divided by whatever the value of m is. So that's why that m value is important. You're going to use it over and over. After you generate your standard curve, when you finally do your calculations, all you're really doing for your food sample absorbances is dividing each one by that same number. And that will put it into terms of micrograms. Does that make sense? That's how a standard curve works. Now, if you were to make standards that were very concentrated, if you kept going and made them stronger and stronger, eventually they would deviate from linearity, those absorbances would. And you might not see, yours might all be linear, but if you see some deviation, don't use those. I just wanted to explain why it deviates. This is true for any spectrophotometric standard curve. There's event at high concentrations, there's deviation from linearity. This is exactly why you were told last week not to use absorbances above 2, but instead dilute them to bring it back down into the linear range and then back calculate what the original absorbance must have been. Here's why you have deviation, though, and notice that it's deviation so that what you're reading is really lower than what the true absorbance would be. If you have a very high concentration of solute, that means there's so many in there that it's pretty likely that if one solute particle is absorbing a photon that's coming from this direction, there's probably another solute particle hiding right behind it that would absorb that photon, but that photon no longer exists. So this one that's hiding in the shadow doesn't get counted in essence, right? That's why you don't want to use any absorbance higher than the highest one that is linear for your standard curve. If you do have deviation, eliminate them from the data so that it doesn't fit it to them. But then pay attention to whatever that highest absorbance is, and that don't use any absorbance from your experimental data that's higher than that today. Because you're going to make all kind, you have all kinds of dilutions. The point is, you're going to scrap most of those. You make all those dilutions in the hopes that one of them will be the right dilution to have a very good reading, a usable reading. Okay, so you don't want very low reading. You don't want to use those because those don't have very high sensitivity. You don't want to extrapolate either or go above that highest absorbance from your standard curve. Therefore, you'll use the one or two measurements that you find that are close to that highest absorbance but not beyond it. Is that all clear? The overall goal is just to do your own calculation of protein content of a sample. Now, did you bring a sample in? It's okay if you didn't, because we have some to choose from. Also, if you brought something in that isn't either a powder or a liquid, then you should choose one of ours, because there might not be a good way to homogenize it. So if you brought something crunchy or something like that, don't open it, eat it later. Just use one of ours. But if you use one of ours, take the whole thing back with you so that no one else will use the same thing. Just put it back when you're done. Anyway, the label says how many grams of protein are supposed to be in one serving of that stuff. You're just doing another measurement to verify or to see how close your measurement comes to theirs. You don't have to use an entire serving. It depends on what it is, how big a serving it is. But you have to pay attention to what fraction of a serving you're using, because just like a dilution, you're going to have to make up for that in your final calculation. One final thing I want to make sure you understand is that when you do your sample tubes and you get an absorbance and you divide that absorbance by the slope of your standard curve, that puts you in micrograms. That means that many micrograms in the entire cuvette tube. Okay. To proceed with the calculation in order to finally get grams per serving, you need to figure out what the concentration of your food sample is. Not the cuvette, but the food sample. Which means you need to divide that micrograms by the volume, but not the volume of the entire cuvette. Because every one of those micrograms of protein came from just the little bit of food sample that's just one ingredient in that whole tube. Therefore, you need to divide the micrograms by the number of microliters of food sample that you put into that particular tube. It's a different amount in each tube, so pay attention to your charts. Does that make sense? That will tell you then what your concentration is of the whole sample that you originally make, only a little bit of which you used. Because concentration doesn't matter how much volume you have, right? It'll be in terms of micrograms per microliter at that point, but you can convert that into grams per liter, for instance. Well, you'll also have to make up, if you use a diluted tube, maybe you will, maybe you won't, depending on what the absorbance is. If you use a diluted tube, you'll have to multiply by the reciprocal of the dilution, right, to make up for that. And then you'll have to, if you only use a portion of a serving, you'll have to multiply by the reciprocal of the fraction of a serving you used. That will finally put you into grams per serving, and that's what you should compare to the label's value. And don't expect to get dead on what they got. But if you're 10 or 100 times off, then that's probably a problem. If you come up with half of what they did or twice, that's not all that big of an error, really. But anyway, that's the whole goal. Now, we have two different kinds of waste we're generating today with separate containers. So I don't want to see anyone putting waste into the wrong container. Nothing down the drain, of course, but there's separate jugs up there. The way that you avoid putting waste into the wrong container is to take 5 seconds out of your young lives and read the little sign that's on the jar before you do any pouring. Definitely do that. Also, you're going to be using this repipetter to deliver Bradford reagent. It's really just a little pump, but Do not touch the little knurled nut here that sets it at 3 milliliters. Don't touch that at all. All you do to operate this thing is put your tube under the spout, touch just this part, lift it all the way up till it stops, and let go. And then as it falls, it'll deliver 3 milliliters into your tube. It's okay for you to check to make sure that it's still set to 3, but it should stay set at 3 if no one touches this knob. My last section broke a repipetter by playing around with the knob, so don't touch it at all. If it's not at 3, just let me know. The only other thing I wanted to say is that we're not, even though we're interested in protein content, we're not directly measuring the absorbance of protein. Protein doesn't absorb well in the visible range. We're also not measuring the absorbance of Bradford reagent by itself. It's a certain color. It's brown when it comes out, so it looks like it would absorb light. It does absorb light of certain wavelengths, but not the wavelength you have set to the spectrophotometer. What we're detecting is protein dye complex. The two have to combine before they change color, which is appropriate for this wavelength to absorb. Okay? So obviously the more protein you have, the more Bradford reagent will turn into protein dye complex, and that's what you directly detect. I think that should do it.